Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Game Fetish Podcast, the first episode of it. I'm your host, Chandler Tate. The podcast is basically, we just go over like what's going on in the video game industry, we'll go over news. The panelists with me will go over what we've been playing, what we like about the games, our opinions on things. We'll go over like reader mail if anybody sends us any questions or things like that, we'll go over that. But yeah, it's pretty much just an hour of fun talking about video games. Today I'm joined by Teg Singh.
Hey Chandler, thank you for introducing me. I'll be having great fun here with talking about video games and whatnot.
Yep, cool. I'm also joined by Austin Peterman.
Glad to be here, Chandler. I also love video games, big fan of Nintendo.
Cool. And I'm also joined by Matthew Byrne.
Thanks for having me, Chandler. I've been playing video games for forever, so this is a pretty cool opportunity, and PC gaming is the best. So.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt's a big PC gamer. I think Take plays Xbox all the time.
Xbox for the win.
I'm kind of all over the place. I play anything.
This
I don't know.
Why you're not good at anything.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a PS3 gamer, just soaking around everything out.
Yep. So, how's everybody doing?
No, pretty good. Pretty good.
Oh, great.
Pretty occupied by World of Warcraft. New expansion, man.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting.
How are you liking it, by the way?
I think I did a lot of things right. I might get a lot of flack for this, but one of the things that I really liked and enjoyed about Cataclysm, which was the last expansion, people really didn't know. Last expansion, they had heroic dungeons, basically, which were really, really tough encounters that you had to learn and you had to really know. And I enjoyed that because it kind of gave this sense of, oh, man, you're going to fail if you don't really know what you're doing. And it kind of gives a sense of, they reward you for learning fights and actually, you know, getting well-knowledged in the game.
Yeah.
I think that was a good idea. I haven't got to 90. I've been playing really casually. I like the new area. The new zones are really, really fun.
Yeah.
Quests have been interesting. Not a lot of, you know, quests are like...
Didn't they strive really hard to go away from, like, the typical kill quests, fetch quests?
A lot of those are just out. A lot of new, innovative quests. And they're not... They don't bog you down with as many quests in each zone.
Yeah.
So it's like free play more.
It's more like you can choose kind of like... If, like, you really don't like this kind of zone and you're, like, high enough level, you can move to another zone. They don't have, like, there isn't just one zone you can go to for, like, levels 85 to 86. You can go to, like, you can hit, like, halfway to 85, go to here. Well, that maybe might be a very good example, but you can kind of do that and kind of mix and match zones and quests, and you don't have to fully 100% complete everything. These papers.
Yeah, I'm sorry if there's any interference today, by the way, by the... It's a nice day outside, so we decided to record outside, but the wind might be a little bit of a factor, so you might hear a little background noise. Apologize. We'll try to edit it out as best as we can if it ever becomes a problem, but hopefully it won't.
Yeah, but, I mean, to conclude what I was saying, I mean, I'm playing a lot of World of Warcraft, League of Legends as well, which is, you know, probably one of my biggest time sinks, but I don't really want to take, like, 20 minutes describing what I'm playing. I'd like to get down to the nitty and gritty of what we're going to really be talking about, so, you know, open it up to whatever anybody else wants to talk about what games they've been playing.
I have a question for you about the Mr. Pantera quest, though. Like, how are they doing the quests differently? Like, is it different than just go kill 10
minutes? It's different because, I mean, with Mr. Pandaria, you get, like, you start in the 85 to 86 zone, and that was a bad example that I put earlier. I wasn't really thinking it through. The 85 to 86 zone, you kind of really have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get to that, they give you other options. I mean, you can do arenas, you can do, like, player versus player, you can do dungeons, you can do questing, but you don't have to do, like, you know, like, it used to be, like, I think, especially for, like, other zones, you had to complete, like, this zone, then this zone, then this zone.
Yeah.
Okay, you couldn't really mix and match. Especially because the zones were just so far away in Cataclysm, they had an underwater zone, which was a pain to fight in because it was water, you know? And you had to fight in the underwater zone, or you could fight in the mountain area, but, like, you couldn't mix and match because they were so far away. So you had to stick, since you were so isolated in what zones you were going to, you had to stick in one zone and finish it, because it just became, like, a time, like, oh, I don't really like the zone. I'm gonna go fly all the way to the other zone, so I can start, you know, from scratch with these like, lower level quests. So I like what they're doing with that.
When you bought the expansion, did you get like 33 days of gameplay, or did they force you to?
I mean,
subscription.
I bought it using the online thing, so they didn't.
Yeah.
Really, I already had my renewable subscription. They didn't give me the 30 day free that I know of. They could have. They were disguised.
Because I know Cataclysm didn't, and I was thinking about getting Mr. Pandaria, but I wasn't really keen on.
I mean, I think. If you already, like, the thing about Mr. Pandaria, I think it's really interesting. I'm not really sure, I haven't really leveled up any alts from, like, 1 to, like, 90, so I wouldn't really know from beginning if there's any, like, interesting new quest lines they've added. But from what I can see, like, they're working more on the end game content, on it being more dynamic and making it so that you're doing, I would say, for example, they're not going to do what they did with Firelands and Cataclysm, which I think a lot of WoW gamers, you know, can agree was one of the most tedious and boring daily quest lines that you had to do.
Yeah.
Ever. But that's just my opinion. I really am enjoying it for what it is. It's not really, you know, it's really enjoyable right now. I don't really know too much about it. I really haven't been trying to, like, delve myself. I know a lot of people got to, like, level 90 in one day, like, playing it for 24 hours.
Poor gamers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but I feel like you really need to enjoy video games more.
Yeah.
If you really take your time and you really, like, you kind of, like,
especially in MMOs, there's so much you can do. Like, if you just power level through everything, you just kind of missed out on all the many different things you can do along the way. I think MMOs, like, leveling up to the level cap is more about the experience rather than just getting up there.
And then, like, end game content's just really a bonus, you know? I mean, like, WoW, like, has enough that you can do with, like, in the experience to get to 90, and then, like, end game stuff is just another bonus just to keep you playing. And I think Blizzard has a really good marketing system, and I think that's why WoW is, you know, considered the king of MMOs, because it really, the system they have is so tried and true. Unless there's another system that really can compete with it, that's the thing, that, like, there really isn't, like, you know, like, you've seen RuneScape.
But it's like, there's, like, all those free-to-play games out there, and, like, they're popular, but they don't have 10 million plus players playing them every day. They maybe, at the most, have no more than a million people playing with their game.
I mean, I could delve into, like, the thing is, what I like with League of Legends, which is another one of my time sinks, is the fact that they're pretty much, they may not be a direct competitor to WoW, but they have, like, a really good model. Like, it's a game that it's easy to get into. It's not overly complicated, but once you get into it, it's hard to really master it. Not anyone can just pick up that the Uber leak gun that they get from pre-ordering the game and just destroy everyone. Not anything is particularly imbalanced.
Yeah.
I mean, there are certain, I mean, there could be imbalances, but not anything is so unbalanced that it just breaks the whole game entirely.
Yeah.
So what I feel with League of Legends is, like, they have that free-to-play model, they have the store system, which is really good.
But it's not, like, pay-to-win.
It's not pay-to-win, it's not pay-to-get-an-advantage, it's not, you don't really have to pay, and they're making it, like, they're, like, for the champion, like, cause you can buy, like, the certain skins, which are, like, outfits for the champions, and they're making it so that you can really, you know, like, they're redoing some of the champions that don't really, that are old and look outdated, so that you really aren't forced to buy these new outfits for the champions just so that they look, you know, decent.
That's cool.
But a lot of talking about, I mean, I don't really want to dominate. I like to hear the diversity of the opinions we got here. So, I mean, if someone else wants to step in with what they've been playing recently.
I mean, PC games are pretty fun, but, I mean, the big topic here should be the new games that have come out on gaming consoles, like Madden 12 or Borderlands 2.
Or Madden 13.
Madden 13.
Yeah, like, unfortunately, there was a typo.
It's actually a segment. We had two games that released this week, were NBA 2K13, which launched, actually, it was the most successful NBA 2K game, I think, in history for the franchise. It launched with a Metacritic score of 90 out of 100. And quoting IGN, they said it's obviously the best hoops game out there, and it might even be the best sports game of all time, period.
The best part is, you can play as Justin Bieber.
Do you have the game?
No.
Oh.
Apparently, what I've heard is there's a Dream Team on there, and the Dream Team includes Justin Bieber.
It does?
Yes, yes, apparently. Yeah.
Is he a small little kid, like, on the team?
No, I think,
it's taller, actually.
He looks, well, facial-wise, he looks like Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
There's a few graphics of him online and things like
that. Yeah, that's where I've seen it.
I have to look that up.
It's understandable that the new basketball game would be so popular, considering what happened last year with basketball, with people wanting to play as the Miami Heat or as one of the... There's a lot of teams that are already loaded right now, and that would make the game maybe for online play more exciting.
Yeah,
I think,
and it's, like, more fun, you know?
I think with what, like, with the evolution of, like, online games, what you see, like, you might see the really good, like, arrival of, like, sports games, like, maybe not dominate, but really taking a presence in the console generation. With, you know, you have, like, you can have online tournaments, you have online rankings, you know, the competitiveness of it is pretty good, and it's also a lot of skill based with, like, how you play the game. You can't just, you know, like, a lot of people think you can just mash buttons and, like, oh man, I just win the game. But there can be skill involved in playing these certain games.
Well,
and
you can mash buttons.
You can mash buttons, but there's a lot of skill involved. And they're not. And the thing is, I think what the consoles really have, it's very hard to play sports games comparatively on a PC, because you don't have that joystick.
Yeah.
The free 360 motion control.
But I think, like, NBA games are the only games to come out on PC anymore. Like, Madden games don't launch on.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Last Madden game launched on PC was Madden 2008.
And I think that's really, like, if I really was only interested in sports games, I'd really think that that's where the consoles really take a shine, just because of the controller innovations that they have. with the, you know, the two, with the joysticks, you know, the buttons, you know, easily to use with your thumb. I mean, it's very easy to use controller that really works well with games that you have to, you know, quickly, you know, time button sequences together.
And it's good to see that they're really putting an emphasis on online play and controls for sports games, because obviously with sports games you can't necessarily have like a story or anything like that that might appeal players, so it's really good to see that they're focusing on what's important when it comes to sports games.
Yeah, it's really, sports games really mostly about like the tight gameplay controls and the fact that just the overall competitiveness really isn't like, may not be a characteristic, but it's definitely a defining moment. I mean, who doesn't want to invite their buddies over to play some Madden and school them as like one of the popular teams? And I think that really carries over with NBA. You know, people have these attachments to these characters, and like, well, not really these characters, but these people in real life, and they're now characters in video games that they can play as and just win with.
Yeah.
And once you see like big popular like NBA teams or like the big like top 10 teams are like in like NBA, you can compete like, online against other people. I mean, I guess like once technology catches up with the concepts, I think that you'll have a really, really interesting kind of experience online with the
you might not even
fantasy football has been a big thing as of late with, you know, everyone having their own leagues. You can do it on you can actually do it on NFL's website. And I think when we have that, you think like, instead of just, like, you know, just playing fantasy football, you know, it comes to, like, games that actually, like, let you make your own fantasy team, make your own league, and then play as that team against other people in the league.
Yeah, they're very similar fantasy games and sports games on consoles.
Yeah, I think that's really, I think, but if you evolve that even further online, you can create, I think what the potential is that you have on NFL games on console, you have, like, oh, you create a league with your buddies on Xbox Live, you know, and then you make your own teams, you name them, you give them your own, like, custom jerseys, and you compete in your own league. You're still playing the game, but you're playing the game with your own, maybe your own custom teams, you know, and they're all, like, your favorite players that you drafted. I think I think it's the evolution of fantasy sports, really, can shine more with consoles and stuff if the technology and the concept itself really merge together.
So, awesome, what games have you been playing lately?
Well, after last year when the Wii released its final major title, which was Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, which is an amazing game. I really enjoyed that one. But after that came out, I started to really get into their portable console, which was the 3DS.
Yeah.
And once the Wii kind of was finished coming out with games, you could tell that Nintendo really shifted their attention to the portable games, and I felt like it really showed, because I felt like they came out with a lot of really good games. I got the chance to play Kid Icarus, and I thought that game really provided a good sense of nostalgia to anyone that had played the older versions of the games. The graphics were nice. And I had been playing a lot of Black and White for Pokemon, because in anticipation with the new Black and White 2 coming out this October.
Cool. Yeah, I've been recently playing through the first Black and White, because I want to also jump into the Black and White 2, but it's like the first Pokemon game to continue on with the story into the next one, so, you know, I'm playing that. And I've been playing on my new 3DS XL, because, like, I got the new bigger one, because the old 3DS I had, like, problems with, because, like, it would hurt my eyes, because, like, the 3D effect would, like, hurt my eyes after using it too long.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there was problems, like, I thought the battery life was pretty bad on it, but now the 3DS XL has a much bigger screen, so it doesn't strain your eyes as hard, and the battery lasts a bit longer, which is nice.
Yeah, so basically the 3DS is just being developed more because they didn't develop it as much in the beginning, and so it had problems. It was a good concept, but now they're releasing another one. What they should have done was made the 3DS XL as the 3DS.
Yeah, that's what annoys me.
Nintendo, they tend to do that a lot with their consoles, is they'll come out with a good idea, but one that isn't exactly refined until later on. Like with the Wii, their idea was motion controls, and at first it was almost not usable, the motion controls for the Wii. It was just a console with a gimmick. But then by the end, like I said with Skyward Sword really mastered the idea of motion controls, and it was exactly how every single game should have been made for the Wii.
I mean, I have to bring up a counterpoint to yours. I mean, I do agree that Nintendo uses a lot of gimmicks in their consoles, but I feel like a lot of the gimmicks really haven't really worked, or are very, like, as you said yourself, you mentioned previously, or I think off recording, that you don't play with a 3DS with the 3D on, which is pretty much the main selling gimmick of the 3DS itself. It's a DS, you know, but it has 3D. And if the gimmick itself isn't usable, then the whole console just kind of loses, like, that kind of charm. Like, if the console itself isn't really, like, bringing anything new, like, tech, but it's only bringing, like, a gimmick, you know? It's the exact same thing with the Wii. Like, the Wii remote control isn't usable in itself. I mean, you put the little additive thing that you get on, and it becomes more, like, usable, but you still have to pay for that to get that added usage to make the gimmick worthwhile, which I think shows lack of testing, and they just kind of rushed out this concept because they figured motion controls, everyone wants it, you know? I think we're kind of straying away from gimmicks. I hope we are, because I feel like as gaming grows, you know, gimmick shouldn't be the only thing. We should be looking at maybe as the consoles are the medium as which games are portrayed on, you know?
Yeah.
You have to focus more on making it so that the games are able to be played at an adequate level, and they don't seem like they lack from any controls of motion controls. For example, with Super Smash Bros. Brawl, which was released on the Wii, and it used the Wii controller, even itself, without the motion controls, the Wii controller is very, very hard to use. You have the nunchuck.
Didn't they let you use the GameCube controllers for
they
that?
They did, but, like, it's only on certain Wiis that were, you know, compatible with GameCube. Not every single Wii was compatible. Like, the one that I had bought because my other Wii had broken, I had to buy a new one, and the new one was not GameCube compatible, so I had to play some Super Smash Bros. Brawl with a nunchuck remote control. I don't think nunchucks are used.
Yeah, you don't use nunchucks.
But you play it, and it's so very challenging because you have to hold it sideways, okay? And you can hold it.
Because all the buttons are in so many different spots.
Actually, you can play with a nunchuck as well. I forgot, but you can hold it sideways, and the buttons become too small and really hard to use. And you can use a nunchuck, but it just doesn't feel as accurate with the movements of the analog sticks. Mm-hmm. And it's harder to put up your guard, like to block with your shield, because the buttons are very weird to use, especially when you're trying to dodge roll. It seems like there's always a delay with the controls.
Yeah.
That's my main complaint with the console itself. When you get to the games that Nintendo makes, I agree. You know, I think Super Mario 64 is one of the greatest platformer games really ever made. The camera's easy to use. The controls are very tight. When you get to, like, these new games, they're basically, all of them either, you know, they're just the same game, you know, with better graphics, or either they're just, like, they're either trying to live off the hype of the old game, like, for example, Kid Icarus. Kid Icarus was not a rail shooter, which it is now on the 3DS. It was originally a platformer, and you're kind of straying into, like, territory that usually is reserved for arcade games, and they really didn't bring anything new. It's just basically you're playing an arcade game portable. You know, arcade games are fun, but they're not something you really want to spend, like, upwards of $30, $40 on to, you know, play an arcade game. That's why they only cost, you know, a couple quarters, just so you can play that experience.
Four, in most places.
I feel like with Nintendo, they're a company that, especially more recently, have been trying to lean on their games in order to have productivity. And I get what you're saying, that some of the concepts for Nintendo's games have been kind of stale, like you might say with Kid Icarus and stuff like that. But at the same time, I feel like as a fan, some fans of Nintendo kind of crave that nostalgia, and I think that's something that Nintendo does really well, is they're able to create nostalgia with their games. Like, they came out with New Super Mario Bros. Is a fantastic game, and if you played the older version, which was available as far back on the Super Nintendo, you could tell they were very similar games, but at the same time, I loved the New Super Mario Bros.
Well, the reason they're doing that is because the old games of Nintendo were so much better. They used to be so much more popular and much more developed according to the time, but now it's kind of just like lagging behind the other consoles.
I may disagree with you. I think a lot of the times, like when you had that nostalgia factor, like kids, especially just like you know, young adults who are basically, you know, they spent their younger years playing games on the NES and the SNES, and basically that was their whole childhood was spent, you know, playing the Mario Brothers and playing all the other games, and then you really get this sense of like, these games are really just the same thing, which is okay, but, like, you know, we're in an age where, you know, technology is really advanced, and we're trying to, like, make new and intuitive experiences, and you have, like, the problem, I think, with Nintendo is they're trying to make a console and develop games for it at the same time, which is what these other companies aren't really doing. You know, Sony doesn't make all its games, you know, Microsoft doesn't make, exactly, they don't make all their games, they have third parties do it, because they don't want to have to spend all this time Because the problem with it, like, I think the problem is, like, you're having this company, they're trying to innovate with technology, with I call them gimmicks, but other people might call them, you know, advances and innovations, you know?
Yeah.
But they're trying to be innovators in the sense of console technology, but the problem is they're also trying to develop new games as well, which doesn't really help them in the long run because they're so split in that kind of
aspect. Yeah, if you divide, you can't utilize all your resources in one place.
I think that's why, you know, you see the PS3 and the Xbox have had, like, I wouldn't say they're better, but I think they've had a lot more time spent on them than really the Wii and, like, the 3DS console-wise, because they're trying to, like, balance the games, and they don't, like, they try to balance games, but they can't jeopardize their money. They're not a company that just makes games, they make the consoles, too, you know,
yeah,
and if they make a flop of a game, you know, that's a lot of money riding on it, because they're such a big company.
And I think you're making a great point about how much it would benefit Nintendo to bring in better third parties, and I think that's something that they're planning on doing with the Wii U. But when you think about the titles that have really made Nintendo famous, like you think about Zelda,
Mario.
And you think about Mario, and like even maybe Metroid, Castlevania's up there. If you were to have these third parties,
although
like,
Castlevania is no longer Nintendo exclusive anymore,
yeah. But like if you were to have, you know, better third parties come in, like I always felt like the Wii and Nintendo in general did a terrible job with the sports games third parties, which we talked about earlier. Like the sports games on Xbox 360 and PS3, fantastic. But yeah, for the Wii, they're just not up there. And
that's coming back to the controller. I mean,
right.
It's probably because the controller isn't as good.
And mm-hmm. If you were to bring in these better third parties and have third party games kind of spell these popular games that are coming out, and you could really just devote time to just making one incredible Zelda game, one incredible Mario game, I think that would really help out Nintendo, and fans would appreciate it.
I think a lot of I agree with you on that they really should be doing that. But when you bring up the third party, I think a lot of the times when Nintendo makes their reboots of like old games, they tend to look at it as it's basically just the same game. They don't like want to. I feel like they have this essence that they're like the mascot for Nintendo, and they don't really want to mess with them. And the problem is like people don't like change, you know, when it comes to, like, their beloved childhood characters. They don't want to see Mario, you know. They don't want to see a Mario shooter, which I admit would be very, very, very stupid.
Mamma mia!
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a very silly concept, but they don't... But the thing is, people just don't want to see that because it ruins their childhood memories, and Nintendo doesn't want to, like... Like, Nintendo goes with very safe choices because they have to be safe because they have to, like... They have to, like... They basically... If they're making all the games for their console, they need to sell, or the console's not going to sell. If the console's not selling, they're not making money. Like, if you make a console, right, you give third-party support, ultimately, you're not investing money into these games. The games are investing money into your console. Like, the games are taking all the risk. If their game doesn't sell, your console doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
You know? You're hurting if your games don't sell, because if your games are not selling, people are more likely to either sell their console or just not buy it, you know, if they don't really want the game.
Yeah.
So I think that's a lot of what they're being forced to do. And I think with the Wii U, especially if they make a better controller than what they've shown, I think they've shown a Wii U Pro controller is what they've shown.
Yeah, but like that's the problem. Like I don't like the Wii. I don't like the big gamepad for the Wii.
Exactly.
Like I think it's too big. Like it's too awkward,
oh,
too
yes.
uncomfortable to like hold and play my hands.
Yeah, especially like, with like you basically have you're holding it like
it's like
a big kind of like
yeah,
a,
it's like
a big. It looks like, it looks to me like a big iPad.
Yeah.
But the problem is like the buttons are like here and here.
Yeah.
And it's very. Very, very awkward to
yeah.
hold.
And like, I like to play the games on the Wii U with the Pro controller, but I also don't want to spend $50 more.
Exactly.
Like the Wii U, the basic model is already $300. That's a lot of money compared to something with the same tech and hardware as the Xbox 360 and PS3, which are priced at $200 to $250.
Yeah.
And now that I have to go out and pay another $50 for a Pro controller if I want to play with a friend or like my brother, or somebody, I have to buy and pay for another $50 controller. Like.
Rides up the money.
Well, yeah.
To summarize, like, some of the problems we've been talking about with Nintendo, how we said that they struggle to make good third parties, they struggle to get rid of some of their older characters and older concepts
yeah.
that might be getting stale. Do you think that kind of ties in maybe to... I always thought that all kind of tied into the fact that they sort of underestimate their playing audience a little bit. I feel like they try and channel it too harshly towards kids, like ages 13
yeah.
and under.
I think the more they channel their audience towards kids, they lose the hardcore Nintendo fans who have been there since the beginning. You know, the 20-year-olds who remember, oh yeah, I remember playing Super Mario. That was
Kart,
a really
yeah.
fun game. You know, I remember playing Mario Kart in the N64. That was a great game. You know, and you have these people, you're losing them. You know, if you go too family friendly, you know, you start losing the people who are actually going to stick with it. I mean,
yeah.
Families are only going to buy it, but they're not going to. The problem is they're going to buy the game. They're going to buy Wii U. They're not going to buy Wii U. They're going to buy the Wii, and then they're going to buy Wii Sports came with it, but they're going to buy like Wii Sports Resort. But they're not going to buy much else, really.
Yeah.
Like the problem is like I think with the Wii that they have a good amount of sales, but they just don't have like other than that. It kind of like the reason why the Wii kind of wasn't, in my opinion, a very good success is because the game started like you didn't have very successful games, mm-hmm. you know.
At least not until the end.
Yeah, not until the end. Until they were like realizing that they had to, you know, put some good games out there. You know, they put out like Mario Kart. That wasn't really toward the end, but that was more towards the I believe toward the middle. Yeah. They put like Legend of Zelda was at the end, but people were wanting a new Zelda title on release of Wii, and they did not really get one. I mean, Twilight Princess was basically just a GameCube game ported over.
Twilight Princess on the Wii was a disaster.
Yeah, it was. It
on
was
the GameCube.
Very,
it was fantastic.
I believe Twilight Princess was a very fun game, and I think it did what it wanted to do in terms of like you played Link, okay, and you did the story. There are a lot of collectibles. You have a lot of side stories and stuff that you can do. But I think one of the major things about like Twilight Princess, like you said, it controlled very horribly on the Wii. They just weren't, I think it's just because they weren't really focusing on making it Wii compatible. And that was basically, I was near the end of the, I wouldn't say the death of GameCube, but, near the decline of GameCube is when Twilight Princess was actually released.
But I felt like Twilight Princess, just like, almost exactly like Skyward Sword, really kind of showed people, like, hey, this is what the system can actually do. But by then, it was too late.
Yeah.
Like, when you think about
Twilight Princess. It had very good. It showed that the GameCube actually could have decent graphics.
Amazing graphics.
Yeah, for a GameCube game. Like, GameCube games actually, in my opinion, had a decent graphic system for what the kind of the hardware that it was working with.
I like the GameCube better than the Wii.
I think even, if you remember, like Mario Kart Double Dash, which came out, like,
that was my favorite GameCube game.
Exactly. It was very, very, it looked very good. And some might even argue it looked better than the Wii in some aspects.
Did you guys ever play Paper Mario 2 at all?
I played Paper Mario on the GameCube, I believe.
That would be the second Paper Mario.
Yes.
The second Paper Mario, I feel like, and I don't want to get too biased here, but I felt like that was probably my favorite game that
I've ever played. I think it does really well in terms of RPGs. Like it, like with if you ever played Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga or any of those games, mm-hmm. like the game on the not the GameCube, but on the DS.
Yeah.
Or the 3DS, I believe. I know I don't think there's one for the 3DS. There might be. I'm not really 100% sure off the top of my head. But like those games are very good in terms of like they give you like RPG kind of turn-based strategy, but they let you like dodge and like block. And they make it so you don't have to sit there and take free damage
mm-hmm.
for like, your abilities, and they encourage skillful play.
Yeah, but like Paper Mario. Oh, since paper just went flying out. There's a second.
I'm actually that breezy, so I mean, I guess it's just. I think it's just the occasional gust of wind is just sweeping through.
Well, I was freaking out because of the bee.
But then, Paper Mario is one of my favorite Mario games like ever made, and then. I played the first one twice. I've beaten it twice, and then I have the second one, but I've just never gotten around to playing
my goodness,
it because I'm not a big Wii fan. I want to play it, but I haven't gotten around to it.
On the Wii, it got
to the point where it was just kind of weird. Like it was like they were like, oh, it's Paper Mario, except we took all the RPG elements.
Yeah,
out.
They took away basically every concept that made Paper Mario
like
Paper
original.
Mario.
You know, right, the originality of Paper Mario was like it can only like theoretically since it was 100% 2D, right? It only really worked as like an RPG,
right? Yeah.
Like really, like RPG or like a platformer. They didn't want to be a platformer. They wanted to be an RPG.
And it nailed it too. I mean, like it really kind of the Paper Mario chain, which up to this point has been three games. Yeah. The fourth game, which is currently the game that I'm most looking forward to
this year,
is Sticker Star.
Yes, that's
is coming out before the holiday season. That's currently what I'm most looking forward to.
Well, are they trying to go back to the roots?
I think that's exactly what they're doing.
Putting in a new gimmick with the whole sticker thing.
But I feel like they're really trying to, and it's actually kind of refreshing to see Nintendo kind of, you know, catch itself and see what it did wrong.
Like, last game we didn't really live up to your expectations, so we're gonna, you know, try to reinvent ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think
usually they don't do that.
I think I don't know. I disagree with you really on the point you mentioned earlier with Skyward Sword. I feel like I was personally disappointed with the game. Because I feel like the art style was very, very flashy, and it looked like very out of place for what kind of like the character models they were using.
Do you maybe feel that was just in response to the fact that you were treated with Twilight Princess to a game with a very dark atmosphere? Do you think it was just too much of a contrast? Maybe.
I think the problem is
there's been like kind of flashy games before with Zelda.
I think really what they tried, like they had Twilight Princess, but the problem is they used the character to seem basic character models that they kind of use in Twilight Princess, and they brought them over to Skyward Sword with a few differences. But the problem is you have these character models that are kind of very realistic, and you have this cartoony, like, kind of world to it, with all the monsters looking very cartoony, and it gives this very stark, like, contrast, and you're like, it's very weird playing it, because you just feel like you're not, like, you don't really immerse yourself, because you're not really playing it to, like, the 100% of what it's trying to be. Yeah. Like, it feels like it's trying to be two different things at once, and that was my main complaint with it. I mean, I had a little bit of complaint, I think with the sword fighting, I think that in itself was more of a gimmick more than anything, because it really got to the point where it's like you had a boss that like he had like one like specific move. I remember there was a boss where you had to wave the Wii. You had to go like this. Like you had to make circular motions.
Yeah, I don't think that was a boss. I think that was just an enemy.
Oh yeah, it wasn't an enemy. There was a boss that you had to do. You had to like actually juke him. You had to hold your Wii U to one side and then strike from the other side.
Girahim. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I had problems with it because it wasn't as it's very responsive for motion controls, but it's not. It isn't 100%. The problem is that fight really required more of 100% kind of accuracy, because if it doesn't record you faking the slash and going like instead of slashing from the right, slashing from the left, and it actually gets you slashing from the right, you know, they would penalize you for it. You know,
yeah.
he would like block, he would catch it, and then he would grab it, and then he had to like break from his grab, and that got really frustrating to me, and I think that really. I mean, it's the difference between gimmick and, like, immersive fighting, you know? Like, combat really shouldn't be, like each boss has, like, one gimmick. Each boss has things you need to watch out for, and skillful play will help you.
But, yeah, with that being said, though, it's, like, that's the one thing that I had wanted that I felt like the motion controls gave it. Since I've been playing Zelda, which has literally been since it began, I played, I think, Zelda A Link to the Past, which was the third game ever made in Zelda. Since I've been playing it, I've always wanted there to be... to have the combat, have there be multiple ways to defeat an enemy, and you can choose how you want to do it. And they finally, I feel like, maybe not necessarily nailed that, but I feel like they finally got away from the point where it's like, hey, there's the guy's big red spot on his face, you just need to hit that.
Yeah, I think Zelda really can get away from the whole, like, for a lot of the games, it was just like, okay, so, to defeat this boss, just use this one item that you got from this one dungeon. That's the only item that's going to be worthwhile. Like, every single item you have before is not going to work on this boss.
And they fixed that in Skyward Sword. They fixed that a lot. Like, just take, for example, the battle you were saying, Girahim. Although it might not have been the most, you know, controlling sound, it was extremely refreshing to, you know, for them to be like, no, you're not going to use the item you got at all. This is just a straight sword battle. That's all that's going to happen.
Yeah. But I think especially with, like, I'll compare, like, in Wind Waker for the GameCube, really, like, that whole game, like, at the end of it, if I can remember correctly, you really only needed the light arrows and the sword, and you really didn't need any of the other real items. And especially, you didn't need the Dooku Leaf that you had gotten earlier, you didn't need the grappling hook, really, you didn't need a lot of the stuff you needed the bow, but, like, you only really need the light arrows, which you got in that battle. And I think Zelda has a lot of issues, like, with kind of, like, the items kind of follow, I think it's called, like, kind of like a Deus Ex Machina kind of thing. Like, they come only useful for this one kind of part, and they can just kind of thrown in, like, oh, here, Link, you're having trouble with this battle. Take the light arrows, so you can win this battle. And then the light arrows, that's it. They're only in it for Ganon's fight, and that's basically, and I think that that shows really poor design of, like, and the Wind Waker is a sound game in itself, but the thing is, I think it shows very poor design, really, in, like, you have this item that only is useful. I mean, you use it around the game, sure, in different, like, spots. But when it comes to bosses are supposed to test your skill, and test what you've learned and what you've, and the knowledge that you've gained. They're kind of like tests, but they're fun tests, you know?
Yeah.
And they're supposed to test, like, what you can do with the items you've acquired up to that point. And the problem is, it, like, seems like Zelda's always been kind of, like, I mean, it's kind of nice that they're actually having, like, a full sword fight, but it still begs the question, like, are they going to actually, in future Zelda games, make it so that items don't become just only useful for one boss, but they become, like, different bosses have, like, different, like, kind of, like...
weaknesses.
Like, yeah, weaknesses that are exerted by certain different item combinations that you can use.
And it'd be nice, sort of, maybe, if they left a little bit of the figuring out what beats a boss to yourself, rather than making it less obvious. But, like, with that being said, I feel like a lot of the stuff you just brought up, say, about, like, maybe Wind Waker, I felt like a good amount
an acceptable amount of that was solved in Skyward Sword, and I feel like that's why I really enjoyed the game. Yeah. There were some things, like, I feel like they were trying really hard to push the new concepts with it that they might have left a little to be desired with the overall design, and maybe
and I think the game, I've heard, I haven't really played through the whole game very extensively, but what I've seen is it's a very very short game, and I've heard there's only really three kind of worlds that you really visit to.
Yeah, correct.
I think, and this is just speculation, somebody really hasn't played the game as extensively as I imagine that you have, but what that kind of seems to me is it kind of like, Zelda's already always been about, like, I mean, they've always had, like, the three temples, but you always play on this kind of, like, big, kind of open area, like, kind of diverse kind of landscape. Mm-hmm. And I think with, like, later Zeldas, what I would like to see is, like, the diversity, and it's not like it's like, oh, here's a, with a lot of other older Zelda games, it's always like, here's the fire temple, here's the water temple, here's the, like, you know, here's the jungle temple. Well, jungle, woods, you know.
Yeah.
That's always, like, the kind of the basic order they go to. And I think with, like, later Zelda games, I really hope they branch out and say, okay, we're not going to just go with the three archetypes that we've developed for, you know, dungeons. We're really going to branch out into new, like, maybe make a sky dungeon with, like, lightning and stuff.
Well, there was a sky temple in Twilight Princess. There was Sky Town.
I'm thinking more, like, I mean, I think Twilight Princess did a lot of that. I mean, it wasn't just, like, you really didn't fight just temples.
Twilight Princess did an amazing job, and I wished a lot that they would have done more of this in Skyward Sword. They did an amazing job of not just making it such a structured format of, like, overworld temple. You know, you, like, one of the temples was a mansion, one of them was, like, a town, one of them was a mine.
It wasn't just temples.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think diversity is good. I mean, they've shown diversity in Twilight Princess and some in Skyward Sword, but I think more diversity is never really bad unless they make it too diverse that it doesn't feel like the same game. Like, if they make a temple that just doesn't feel like it fits in with the theme of the game itself.
Right.
While we're on the topic of Zelda, Matt, do you play any of the Total War games, by the way?
I believe, are those the real-time kind of strategy kind of... I've heard of them, and, I think I may have... I don't know if I bought... I don't think I bought one. But
yeah.
I think... I don't know. For me, it kind of comes down to, like... I like real-time strategy, and I don't know. I don't think I really came around to, like, really enjoying those kind of games.
Like, I play those games almost, like, every day. Like, I love those games. But, I didn't really get to look into it, but I was reading a headline today. I forget which feed it came across, but, they're making a Zelda mod. They released a Zelda mod for Medieval 2 Total War. Where I have no idea how it works, I didn't really get to read into it, but I don't know if for Total War fans out there, also like Zelda, there's a mod out there for you.
That'd be interesting.
So, I guess that kind of brings us into what is something that we're hoping to focus on now, which is the Wii U, which is coming out soon. So, I personally feel like there's more to like than there is to dislike about the Wii U at this point. So, I just want to get your guys' opinion. Tag, what do you like about the Wii U at this point?
The Wii U, well, it's just that it's a better model than the Wii. See, that's why I don't buy, like, the first console that Nintendo comes out with, like the DS, but I would buy the DS2, because then usually it's better, and the DS has glitches and whatnot, so I would do the same thing with the Wii U. And the thing I don't like is especially the controller. That'd be the biggest thing.
And, like, I just wrote an article the other day just pretty much ranting, like, just everything I hated about the Wii U. And, like, the biggest thing I hated about the Wii U is how Nintendo's pretty much playing catch-up with the next generation of consoles. And by the end of next year, Sony, when the Wii U releases, Nintendo will finally be ahead in terms of hardware. They'll be ahead of the Xbox 360 and the PS3, but not by that much. Nintendo claims that the Nintendo Wii U will be 20 times more powerful than the current generation of consoles, which is PS3 and Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
They're like three, five-year-old consoles.
I mean, yeah, I think. Yeah, they came out like hard. 5 years ago, really.
Yeah. Which, so. It's not that hard to beat them out. And by the time the PS4 and the Xbox 720, whatever we want to call them, might come out, most likely they're going to blow the Wii U out of the water in terms of graphics. Because, like, if you look at some of the game demos that were at the Wii U, like E3 and out at PAX, all those, all the conventions, like, the games don't look that fantastic.
Well, yeah, because they can't get third parties, as we mentioned previously.
I mean, I think there's a difference between, like, the problem is, like, I think third parties are more hesitant, because we, Nintendo's always going with this, like, family-friendly video games, like, we're for the family, like, they haven't always done that, but that was their whole, like, that was their whole marketing shtick with the Wii, basically.
The Wii, basically.
Like, we are the friendly video game console for families. We would like to pray.
I feel like there's no real marketing push for the Wii U, like, they don't really have a big, like, the Wii, as you said, was all about family-oriented. It was like, big on motion gaming. The Wii U
which I'm hoping they kill completely with the Wii U.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, like, the Wii U is like, hey, here's our Xbox 360 equivalent. Like, they don't really have a big, it's like, oh, cool, I already have that.
Like, the people who have already...
feel like paying $300
they've already lost the hardcore, and they're just trying to get them back. But the problem is, they're saying, oh, we're going to have, you know, third-party support. Where is it? I mean, at the demos, I haven't really seen any third-party games really being demoed. I may be wrong with the Wii U, but I haven't seen,
they had Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, they've been demoed, but, like, the third-party games are coming out for it. There's no incentive to get rid of my PS3.
Which Assassin's Creed would have
demoed? Assassin's Creed 3 is coming out, going to be coming out, Black Ops 2. Like, all the third-party games are coming out for the Xbox 360 and PS3 already. And Madden 13. Like, all those games are already out for on our current generation of consoles. The Wii U is, like... And, like, they're also releasing past games.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know, you can continue. I just wanted to know, when's the Wii U planning to be delivered?
I believe it's November 18th. It's in November, I think it's the 18th. Okay. But, like, all the games coming out for it are games we can already buy on our current consoles that we own. There's no incentive to go out and flush out $300
for the Wii U. As usual, Nintendo's lagging behind the other consoles.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the games at E3 that they did show that they would be selling that are exclusive to their system just weren't there. It's like when the Wii first came out and Wii Sports came with it, you know, Wii Sports was actually a lot of fun at first.
But it wasn't a sustainable title.
Right, it wasn't a sustainable title.
It didn't have depth to it.
Right.
Yeah, I believe Nintendo... No, well, Nintendo Land comes with... I don't know, have you heard of Nintendo Land?
Yeah, and then they're coming out with a Nintendo Land to go with that.
But that only comes with the $350 bundle, not the standard core bundle.
Right, and that's not... Obviously, that's not a sustainable game. That's a family-type game to kind of tie you over till they come out with better games. So the whole thing just kind of feels like they're trying to recover at this point. And they're not doing that great.
And, like the first-party games that they are releasing for it are games that I'm not very... Like, Pikmin. I loved Pikmin on the GameCube and the Wii. But, like, Pikmin 3 is coming out. It's like, I've already played that game. I want something new. Like, they're coming out with a Mario game.
Yeah.
Same as any other Mario game that's come out in the past. It's just in HD. Like, there's no real big game that really wants me to buy it.
I mean, yeah, I might buy Mario, but at this point, considering it's the only real game other than Pikmin, like you said, that's coming out, that'd basically be, like, asking me to spend almost $400 on a Mario game. And
exactly.
I think Nintendo, if they really,
want
the Wii U to shine, I think third-party, third-party support is really important, so they can keep up with, like, releases. So they don't get, like, swamped by, like, oh man, you know, it's like, I want to get Assassin's Creed, and I like the Wii U, but it's just not on it. Mm-hmm. Like, which isn't true, I know, but I'm just using that as kind of an example for, like, maybe other games that come out, like, for the Xbox and the PS3, but might not come out for the Wii U. The kind of, like, consumers just like, well, I really want the Wii U. It looks like a really good system, but just doesn't have the games I want. So I think third-party system is third-party support is really important. But Nintendo, as like a game company, really needs to show it can't only make like games it knows it's already made. You know, it needs to show that it can make new kind of interesting kind of styled games. Like, I'm not saying just copy Left 4 Dead, make a zombie shooter. Or, oh, copy Call of Duty, make
is what they did with Zombie U. Although Nintendo specifically isn't making it, but Zombie U is like it looks cool, but
yeah, it doesn't look bad. But I mean,
yeah. But I think what the thing is, what Nintendo really needs to do is show that they have, as video game developers, they have, you know, the chops to make actually good games that have depth to them, that aren't just like, you know, platformers or racing games or family-friendly games. Because they really show, they need to show, like, it's like with actors, you know, you want to have an actor, like, actors in movies really need to show that they can't just play only one certain kind of role. And, like, usually the best actors are the ones that you've seen in just totally contrasting roles. Like, they play, like...
Johnny Depp.
Like really. Like, Johnny Depp has played Stark serious roles. He played Pirates of the Caribbean. He played
creepy roles.
Rum Diary.
He was played, a gecko.
He was...
Like, Johnny Depp can essentially play anything. Like,
really,
he's not a great actor in all his movies, but he has the skill to do it.
But I think that just sums up, like, really what I was trying to get at. It's just, like, You know, you want to have a developer that can really make, you know, a wide variety of games that like the gamer can be like, wow, you know, I really like this company. And I'll take example for Blizzard. Blizzard made World of Warcraft, which is basically like it's an MMO, and then they made a real time strategy game, and then they made a dungeon crawler.
Yeah.
Three totally different, like, they don't, none of those games mm-hmm. play the same way. Mm-hmm. So they all have different play styles, which shows that Blizzard really can diversify its kind of games. But, I mean, there's other problems with Blizzard. I mean, they got, a lot of people consider Blizzard's purchase by Activision to be awful, because Activision is a terrible company hired by terrible people.
Yes. And what you've been saying is it's really unfortunate, because basically what you said about Nintendo having to really show what they're capable of doing, they basically did the exact opposite of that at E3.
Yeah.
When they first released the Wii U. Because really, you know, I'm assuming it's just because maybe they really didn't have anything else left to show, but, I mean, really, basically, all they showed off at E3 was Pikmin, which, mm-hmm. you know, is nice, but... And then, like, what was the game that comes out with it, the package?
Nintendo Land.
Yeah, basically, Nintendo Land, which is, like, a family-oriented game. And then, you know, they're trying to come out and say that they're capable of doing everything that the Xbox 360 at Microsoft or the PS3 can do at Sony. But, you know, they asked them questions about, you know, internet play. There were some questions they couldn't really answer about internet play and just multiplaying in general. And it's just...
I remember trying to multiplay on the Wii. You had to get someone's code, enter the super long code into your Wii, and then...
That was a pain. I think the problem is, like, when you have a game expo like E3, you know, the people who watch E3 and are really interested aren't the mom and dad looking to buy, you know, a new game system for Christmas. Mm-hmm. You know, those are not the kind of, that's not your audience at E3. That's not what you want to unveil to them. What you want to unveil is the people who play video games seriously. The people who go are people who take video games seriously because they have to work for some sort of video game company to get passes to go to E3. People who watch online are people who are dedicated enough, they want to know about video games.
Yeah.
You know, you're not looking at, you're just a casual kind of playing, like, puzzle games and, like, you know, mm-hmm. Wii Sports. That's not your audience. And I think Nintendo really needs to realize that, like, the point of, that's the whole point. Like, if you're going to avail E3, focus entirely on, like, get your third party stuff and try to wow everyone with what's the capabilities your system has for third party, especially online play. That's so important. Microsoft has Xbox Live, which makes them so much like, it makes them a killing basically in, like, monthly fees, basically, because everyone wants to use my Xbox Live because it's the only way to stay in contact with your friends over Xbox, and it's the only way to basically, you know, play together online and stuff. Do not hit that B because he will sting us all.
Yeah. Okay, but assess for time, I'm going to shift this right into the news here. We spent a lot of time going over the first part of the show. But let's jump into the news.
I was just about to try to shift.
And do, what games have you, in a nutshell, Tag, what games have you been playing?
I've been playing Madden 13, Skyrim, Minecraft a lot, you know, that's a fun game. Just those kind of games.
I just have a quick question. What do you think of the physics engine? The new physics engine for Madden 13.
It's good, I guess, but I mean, it's not as good as it could be.
Yeah.
Like, the thing is, you can trip over your own players. It's much more accurate and real, mm-hmm. which would make it better.
That's like the thing that's kind of pushing me away from buying Madden 13. Like, the other Madden games are fun. They're more of like an arcade kind of style. Like, well, not an arcade-ish, but like, it's just to go and play football and have fun. But
yeah,
now
you don't have to be as precise.
Yeah, now Madden 13 is kind of turning more and more into a, like, a simulator kind of game. It's like, it's too realistic. It's getting, like, too realistic to the point where it's not as fun, you know.
Yeah.
It's like Battlefield 3. Like, I like the game, but it's too real for me to have fun. Call of Duty, it's just like you go in, shoot some of your friends and have fun. It's like you pop out. And then Battlefield 3, it's like you have to approach this like it's an actual...
It's like strategy.
Yeah,
inside of.
I understand people like that, but yeah.
So, I mean, another thing about Madden 13, they came out with the Game Face. You can, like, upload your own picture onto Madden and then make a player of yourself.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I know. I tried that. It was fun.
We'll be right back. But jumping into our first news story here, the PlayStation Vita has been particularly selling well in stores, guys. As you already know, they maybe shipped over 2 million units at the most, I believe, and the year it's been out, so it's not doing very well. Sony recently talked with IGN, stating that they're confident with the $250 price point of the Vita still, despite the sales numbers, but they said in an interview that Sony said the price cut is not so much if, but when. We always aim to establish price cuts, but we won't have the price down for this Christmas. Do you guys think that the Vita, that Sony should finally jump on the gun? Like, with the 3DS launch didn't sell well, Nintendo dropped the price point by like $50, I think it was. $50, and then...
Yeah.
Yeah, and then like, it's sales... Around. No, they dropped about $80, I think.
It's around $180 now.
Yeah. And then, like, they dropped the sales numbers, and then it sold millions and millions of units over that holiday season. Like, if they did not drop that price, it would not have sold as well.
If you make a price high to begin with, and then price cut it, people are going to be like, oh, they price cut it, let's go buy it.
While it's cheap.
Yeah.
I am very biased because I love my PS Vita so much. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, as someone who's played both the 3DS and the PS Vita, I love it. Like, a lot. It's got what you want on like a handheld. It's got very good. It's got a good internet browser built into it. Very sturdy and stable. I mean, it doesn't have the wide variety of apps, but you know, there's certain apps you can get YouTube if you want. Other than that, I mean, you really have what you want on it.
Does it have Hulu and Netflix on it?
I think it has Netflix. I'm not sure about Hulu. I didn't look up Hulu, but like I bought Marvel vs. Capcom 3 on there. It plays beautifully. It looks beautiful. The graphics engine really surprised me. It's very powerful for a handheld system. Mm-hmm. It looks like a smaller version of the PS3, really. Like, it has very powerful hardware, I believe.
Yeah, and then they're doing all the things with, like, the new crossplay features. Like, I cannot wait until the PlayStation Battle All-Stars Royale, whatever it's called, comes out.
As soon as it comes out, I'm buying it probably only... I'm starting to stray away from really, like... Here's the thing.
It has a crossplay feature, meaning like you can play with a PS Vita player on your PS3 screen, or like a PS Vita can connect to the PlayStation 3 game.
Yeah, you can make it another controller.
I think they're also doing it so that if you buy it on the PS3, you get a free copy for the PS Vita.
Yeah, if you buy the PS3 version, you get the PS Vita copy free. It's downloaded to the car, which is, I think, is awesome.
Yeah, I feel like I'm starting to stray away more from like consoles, really, because like a lot of the games that I really, really want are really just on my PC, which I love. And, like, the games that I don't really want, and, like, the games that I, like, I don't know, like, it seems like if I can't really play on my PC, I want something portable. Laptops work, but laptops aren't really handheld. Yeah. So when it comes to handhelds, like, the PS Vita is just basically a perfect fit for me. I mean, I'm not really concerned. The only thing I really think that's concerning me is, like, really, like, over the holiday break, I think what they really wanted to do, and I'm really kind of disappointed they didn't do, is they needed to have third-party developers announce, like, a plethora of titles. Released maybe probably in November, close to the holiday season. A price cut would have been good, and that probably would have.
That's what they should do now. I mean,
I'm excited for the.
If they're not going to do a price cut, they should at least do.
Yeah.
More games.
Like I think that's one of the reasons why the PS Vita and then the 3DS didn't really sell well on launch. Is like both of them had like bad sales just because like you had like these games that just weren't like worth like okay you're gonna pay just for like one game that you really really want.
Yeah.
Like, they just had this like wide game variety that you really really like enticed you into it.
Yeah, but now there's like a bunch of new games coming out for the Vita this holiday season that I think are cool. Like I cannot wait until like November is the point where I'm finally gonna buy a Vita where it has the Assassin's Creed Liberation bundle where it comes with the white PS Vita, which I think looks awesome. And it comes with Assassin's Creed Liberation, which I think is the game that's
has me. I definitely think, in my opinion, PS Vita definitely is worth a buy as an investment because with the graphics engine, there's no strict limitations on what it really can perform.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's a sound investment because basically people are going to be. I think game companies really just want to develop for it just because like you're not limited to like oh man I have to go with the 3DS you know because I had to go for like the 3D kind of gimmick to it you know.
Yeah.
Which is okay, but I think I like what they're doing with the PS Vita.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any Star Wars fans here, by the way?
Well, the movies, yeah.
Woo! Movies, yeah. Well, another Star Wars, besides Star Wars 1313, which looks awesome, there's another Star Wars game coming out, but it's only going to be for the XBLA. Mm-hmm. It's called First Assault. There is nothing is known about the game other than the fact that it was announced, but I just thought it would be interesting to throw in there that Star Wars is all of a sudden getting a renewed, like, interest.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, we have Star Wars 1313 coming out.
I heard it's got a cool cover.
It's kind of cool. I remember that name. The cover for the game, I thought Star Wars versus Thought was pretty cool.
I can throw out maybe, like, just a little bit of knowledge on this. When me and my brother used to own the original Xbox, they had a Star Wars game that came out. I want to say it was called something like Star Wars 100 versus 100. And then...
Me and Star Wars Battlefront?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Battlefront.
Yeah, Battlefront. It was
yeah,
like,
Battlefront.
Yeah.
And then I got the chance to play that, and I actually liked that game a lot.
Yeah.
So if that's anything...
I remember I have a neighbor up the street where he used to have a PlayStation 2, and every single day after school I'd go to his house, because I didn't own a PlayStation, I had a GameCube. And so, like, half the games that came out, like, didn't come out on the GameCube because it was Nintendo. Like, they're really strict about what games, well, they used to be, about what games came out on their systems. And so, like, his name was Nick, he had Battlefront, Battlefront 2, and, like, Lego Star Wars and all those games. Like, he was a big Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. I used to go to his house every day and play Battlefront. I remember that. That was fun.
That was a good game.
Yeah. Do we have any Minecraft players here, by the way? Well, Tag, we have Matt.
Yeah.
Big, Minecraft, there's not some Minecraft sold over 4 million copies on Xbox 360 now and 7.5 million on PC.
It's more than PlayStation Vita sold.
I think what this is showing as like as a game that seems like the people are wanting more organic experiences. And Minecraft can be argued it's probably one of the most organic experiences for a game out there.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
that's intuitive and easy to use. Like you basically, it's like, okay, they give you this world that you can do anything you want on it, and they just don't give you, you're only limited by what you can really, like, think up, and what you
yeah,
really...
Yeah, they give you a base to start with, yeah. And then you can just do whatever.
Yeah.
And that's why it's selling so well, especially on the Xbox 360, because then you can play with your friends, like, easily. Like, the PC, you have to make a server, but here you can just start up a game with your friends.
Yeah. And then, like, the whole, how they released it, like, in the alpha, like, they originally released it on PC, like, in the alpha, I forget what it was called, but it was, like, an alpha version.
Yeah, they released it, how they did it is they used to have it in what's referred to now as creative mode, and what they had it so that, like, you had unlimited access to resources, and it wasn't, like, a survival game.
You could just build stuff.
You could build whatever you wanted, and you had access to all the different kind of blocks, and then they started going into more survival, I think it was called in-dev.
Yeah.
It was called, I think it's, I believe that stands for in-development. I could be wrong. I'm not really an expert on the lore of Minecraft. Mm-hmm.
Has it officially released it, or is it still in
yes, it has officially released. I believe that was earlier this year, I believe.
Yeah.
Officially released. It's still, you can still kind of technically call it an in development
because they keep on adding stuff.
What they want to do is they want to keep the game fresh. They keep adding new things to work with, making it so that, I mean, Minecraft is limited by the certain things that aren't in the game, but they're adding them. You know, they're adding more things so you can.
Well,
you can have more
the thing is, you can add mods too.
Yeah, but I think the mods, to me, like the mods are good, but the mods really are just like kind of like a like, especially for Minecraft. Minecraft looks the developers look more at mods like suggestions. You know.
Yeah.
They like Like, especially for example for Minecraft, there was something called Pistons, you know, was a mod for Minecraft that eventually got put into the actual game. And I think that really shows that the Minecraft developers are really looking at mods and saying, you know, if it's a really good idea, we're going to use it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people think that's, like, stealing from the mods, but I think that's really, really what people want. I mean, if it's a good enough mod that people really want it, then I really think it should be in the game.
Yeah, that's the whole point. If enough people, like, get that mod, then obviously it's popular, and so they should incorporate it into the game.
Yeah, and, like, I think, tying into, like, what we the next story I have is, listed down is, Left 4 Dead 3. Valve was talking to Video Games 24/7 in an interview and said, they brought up Left 4 Dead 3, and they said, at 3, you know, sometime down the road, he replied, like, anything, I would say that to all of our games, it's not a promise when or where, but they're interested in making another Left 4 Dead game. But I think, like, Left 4 Dead is one of my favorite zombie games, like, ever made, before, and but I think the game, what's really kept that game alive is the mods, is because there's so many different maps and different game modes and stuff you can download for it, which really helped it in, like, the long run.
I think it really helps, and I think it really kept, I think you're trying to, like, hint to the, kind of kept it, like, the longevity of the game.
Yeah.
Really, but I think it comes to basically with Left 4 Dead 3, you know, Half-Life 3, like, games that really, like, everyone really wants, you know. That, like, that have been hinted at but never really released. The problem is you have these, like, these games, and people have these expectations for these games, like, especially for Half-Life 3, people expect Half-Life 3 to be released as basically, you know, they like the savior of all games, that will be like the greatest game ever created. And but it's basically a fantasy. The game represents this kind of idea that all players have, that like, and like the goodness of games, and like Half-Life 3 will like be like this embodiment of that. The problem is you put these, so much stress on the developers to do it, and they don't do it. They make a really good game, but you have these such high expectations that this game will be the greatest game ever made, but yeah. It's not, because it's just impossible for a game developer to make maybe the perfect game. People really expect that. Maybe less so for Left 4 Dead 3, but when you put a lot of pressure on it, like, the problem is Valve is a company that knows when it's really kind of, not, I wouldn't say running out of ideas, but when it's trying to sound like a broken record. An example, like, for their Team Fortress 2, they released a Man versus Machine,
yeah.
Which basically you and a bunch of other people played against bots, like computer-controlled players. And I think it was interesting as, like, kind of like a kind of game mode, trying to make it so it was a fresh new experience. I think that's a really good idea. Valve is a very good company when it comes to, you know, reinventing and innovating.
Yeah.
When they really need to, and they really need to keep the games fresh.
Like, I think if they ever do release the Left 4 Dead 3, I think they definitely do need to redesign, like, keep, like, the core of the game the same, but, like, they need to, like, in Left 4 Dead 2, I like Left 4 Dead 2, but, like, I think they released a year, like, exactly, like, a year right after Left 4 Dead 1 came out. I think they're more so just milking success of the game, like, trying to get as much money off of it as they possibly could. Because Left 4 Dead 2 and Left 4 Dead, there's virtually no differences between the two, except it's just a bunch of new maps you can play.
Yeah, what they should have done was keep it for a little bit, so people would get anxious for it, and then could also develop it more.
Or they could just release a couple more DLC guys.
I like the idea of four-player survival zombie, and I think I like the idea they made new characters.
But yeah, like, they could have done that in DLC. Like, why do they have to release a whole new game? Like, Left 4 Dead 3 is, like, everything that could come out in a mod or a DLC for Left 4 Dead 2. Like, if they don't do something different, go, like, Left 4 Dead 2, they dabble with the story a bit more, but there was nothing really important or big happening with it. Like, I think if they want to, maybe they should make it more story-oriented. I don't know what they should do, but I definitely think they should go in a different direction with Left 4 Dead 3.
Okay. Okay, so
next topic.
Yes, let's move on. Duo Games unveiled a new dual analog controller for the iPad and iPhone.
Oh.
You clip the device onto the controller, and current games that support this controller are Nova 3, Modern Combat 3, Order and Chaos Online, etc., etc. I think really this shows, like, I think one of my issues I have kind of with this, like, just kind of reading it over, is kind of, I think this shows maybe a loss of a view on what the market really is for the iPad and the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
What do you really think? How do you think this is really, like, gonna, like, you know, appeal to, like, the people who own the iPad and iPhone for the apps and stuff they get, like, you know, like the puzzles and the little platforming ones, the ones that really don't require the controller? How do you think that this will sell?
Well, I think they've kind of, I think game developers have kind of, like, lost sight of, like, what the whole purpose of apps for the iPhone and iPod and stuff were. Like, they were just for quick little fixes, yeah. Like Angry Birds. This was a fun little quick game you can play, like, while you're waiting in the car, like,
yeah, just, you know, as
some on the go.
Yeah, but here they're, like, trying to appeal to hardcore gamers, but
yeah,
it's not,
like,
gonna work because this isn't a console.
Yeah.
Developed especially for games.
It's like, why do we, for, like, instance, like, all these new big, like, they're trying to make, like, big entertainment games come to, like, the iPhone when it can't handle that kind of game, and that's not what the iPhone's for.
It will never be as good, it'll always just be a watered-down version.
Yeah,
so
and it's
can't,
like,
really enjoy it as much as...
Yeah, it's like ordering Chaos Online, why do we need a full-fledged MMO on my iPhone? I don't want to play an MMO on my iPhone, I don't need an MMO on my iPhone.
Just go home and play on the computer.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to spend hours and hours and hours and hours on a time looking at my screen on my phone, I'll just play games 100 times better on my computer if I'm going to spend that amount of time playing it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I agree. I think it's lost sight on who is really why purchasing their apps, and it's really, like, it's really overestimating what the potential the iPad and iPhone really has graphics wise.
Yes, the iPad and iPhone, it's supposed to be an all around thing. It's not supposed to be specifically developed for one, like, genre.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be, you can use it for notes, you can use it for
quick gaming. You can use it to listen to music, listen as a phone.
Yeah.
I mean, if Apple did work, if Apple were to come out with something like that that was designated specifically for games, you know, sure, I'd be interested. But at this point, you know, I think it's just a bad idea to push forward.
That's like what I think, like, the next... Have you ever heard of Apple TV? Like, the little box that plugs into TV? And I think they should really push that into, like more of a gaming platform. Like, they can... game developers develop games for the Apple TV, and so, like, they can actually... It would just be, like, a digital form of big console games.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people would buy that, too.
Yeah.
I'm going to announce the next topic, because I'm really not experienced with Assassin's Creed. I mean, I've played a few of them, but I think other people here have more knowledge on Assassin's Creed, more...
The Borderlands, too.
Yeah.
Well,
I missed Borderlands, too.
You missed BI. Like,
So I know you guys have all been talking about Borderlands, too, a lot. I know. Matt, have you played it?
Due to lack of funds, unfortunately, I could not play it.
I remember you were on the car right over here saying how Borderlands 1 is your favorite game.
It's in my opinion, it's one of the greatest games. I mean, what other game combines RPG, shooting, a story, and quirky characters so well than Borderlands 1? I think Borderlands 2 does that well. And they've announced, like, Borderlands 1 has done a lot with the DLC, and Borderlands 2 plans to do that. Mm-hmm. Plus, they want to add new character classes and stuff, which, in my opinion, is very good. I mean, what I saw from picture, they're adding, a female class, but I think it controls, like, robots or something. I'm not really sure. I don't think a lot was announced, but I think, in my opinion, that's very cool. Like, instead of, like, they're making the game more organic, and they're adding new DLC that just isn't, like, oh, three new maps, or... Four new color skins, or hey, your gun can look like this shade of blue.
Mm-hmm.
So,
like the thing we're trying to get is that Borderlands 2 just came out, and they also announced Borderlands 3, but it's not yet in development. They're just focusing on DLC for the second game.
I think it's a good decision.
Yeah.
I'll do the next topic if we want to move on. No, I mean, well, the thing is, I don't like I was saying earlier. I don't have an expansive knowledge of Assassin's Creed, so I don't want to
Assassin's Creed 3 hasn't come out yet. The next story is that they announced the season pass DLC.
What I was trying to get onto is I don't have a lot of knowledge about Assassin's Creed, and I also haven't really been trying to follow much of Assassin's Creed 3 either, which is why I didn't really know that Assassin's Creed had already been promised to be on the Wii U.
Yeah.
So I wanted to open this discussion more to you guys, who seem to be more knowledgeable to what's really happening with Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed, installations.
Assassin's Creed 3 is pretty much just wrapping up the story. Have you ever played any of the games?
I've played the games, but I wanted to announce the story so it would focus more on what your opinions were.
Yeah,
on these,
well, like the Assassin's Creed games to date have always focused on Desmond Miles, and then you're Desmond Miles, and then he gets into, like, this chair thing called the Animus, and then he takes on the role of his ancestors of the past, or assassins, and now Assassin's Creed 3 is just kind of wrapping up Desmond's story. It's not wrapping up the series, but it's wrapping up Desmond's story.
Yeah, I mean, all I know really about it is that it takes place in the Revolutionary War, and you play, like a half Native American, half British, or...
that British guy.
So it's probably going to be like Halo, where they're done with the main story, and then they're going to come out with...
Yeah, like,
I mean, I think
Halo, what was it?
3 ODST, Halo Reach.
And then they're making Halo 4. But I think with the story, how it's announcing there's going to be a new DLC called The Tyranny of King Washington that will be told through multiple downloadable content packs featuring George Washington becoming the King of America.
I think that's cool.
I think that's a new idea.
I've never bought DLC before for Assassin's Creed. Like, I've always just played, like, the main story and then stopped because I never really had any incentive to go on and play it. But I think I might actually buy this because that actually sounds really cool to see what happens when George Washington becomes king.
I think my only concern with the DLC aspect of it is a lot of complaints have been made about, like, day one DLC. Like, the game comes out, okay, here's a DLC pack, you know? I think the thing is, like, you want to have, like, people play through the game and they feel content. Like, oh, man, I played through the story. I've kind of, you know, kind of getting bored. Bam! Here's the new, you know, here's
the
new DLC.
That's what Skyrim did.
Yeah, that's what Skyrim waited a pretty long time to release a DLC. They could have released a DLC, like, a month afterwards. They waited a little bit. They wanted to make sure that people were starting to get tired of Skyrim. They weren't exactly getting, like, they felt like they were just like, I'm going to move on to another game. Oh, look, DLC. whole new game, more additives. I think the DLC itself sounds very exciting, sounds very new and fresh, but I just don't feel like it's something that really should be released. If it's something that's going to be like
It's not day one DLC. What they're saying is that this George Washington DLC pack will be a part of the season pass, so you can buy for $29.99 on across all the platforms that's going to be released on. But it's going to be like over maybe the course of the next like 6 months. It'll be a three part DLC pack, and it'll come out in sections, and then you can buy the pass or you can buy them individually.
Man, with Assassin's Creed, I really just feel like Assassin's Creed helps to really show what Microsoft is capable of doing from like a creative standpoint and how they're able to tell stories, because
I think it's Ubisoft.
But just like a lot of, I think it just really, it's one of the most creative stories that I had ever heard recently from a game, and that's really, I didn't pick up Assassin's Creed until the second game because it just looked like such an interesting plot to me.
Assassin's Creed always has my favorite storyline of that, of any games like that.
Yeah, the story of Assassin's Creed is good.
Yeah, I love the Assassin's Creed story games.
Next topic,
Dice
looking to bring Frostbite engine to mobile devices. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, so like the Frostbite 2 engine that's currently runs Battlefield 3, and it's also gonna be running the Medal of Honor Warfighter, which comes out this month on October 30th, Dragon Age 3. Which just announced earlier in Army of Two, Devil's Cartel, which was announced a few months back. It's they're trying to bring it to the mobile devices as well. So I'm guessing
PS Vita.
I'm guessing PS Vita, yeah, and iOS devices, maybe Android. Yeah, it would work best on the Vita. I don't know how well it's gonna work.
I think. I wonder if they're gonna do 3DS. Yeah.
Is that the same engine they used to make Battlefield, or is it a different engine? Because I know
it's
Dice.
It's probably a watered down version of Frostbite 2, which they used to make the third game.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't know. I had multiple complaints about like the engine for Battlefield. I mean, the problem, I think, a lot with the lighting. I mean, there were recent posts online. They turned off a lot of these lighting effects that were already like default in the Frostbite engine, and the game looked a lot better. So, and like, I don't know. I think power wise, like Battlefield 3 shows that the Frostbite engine, at least 2, which I believe that's what you mentioned, there was. I think it shows it has some power behind it. And it can really do some work, but I think it needs to be edited, and I think DICE needs to consider like the complaints of people that they have on like the lighting and stuff. The engine might be powerful, but you know, if the lighting looks unrealistic or looks very like dull and gray, I think a lot of shooters like suffer from like they have these beautiful landscapes, yet they put these like dull lightings on them that make them look very, very like.
Oh yeah, I hate it when games do that.
They put like blue lighting on, and then glare from the sun that like just like shows on like the whole screen. I think they can maybe be able to make those changes. I think that'd be actually a pretty interesting.
It's like have you ever heard of the sci-fi game Syndicate that released last year?
Yeah, I think I seen
that remake. I got the game like the game itself like it wasn't that great of a game. Like they overused the bloom effect so much. Like I don't know if you've ever played like a PC game where you can customize like the different graphical options. It's like you have like the bloom slider bar. They just like slid that all the way out to as far as they could. Like then, it just had like this white bloom effect that was it was overused way too much. It was annoying to look at. It's like
my eyes.
Yeah.
The upcoming zombie survival game, The War Z, is now available for pre-order, which gives you access to the game's beta starting on October 31st.
Yeah. There's two different packages that you can pre-order. There's a survivor price for $19.50. Then you have the Pioneer for $29.99 and the something else, I don't know what it's called, but it's $49.99. The packages are all discounted, and you get some different. You get
different pre-order bonuses.
Yeah, you get all the different pre-order jazz that you normally would get. But the War Z is pretty much just a big rip-off of the DayZ, I think. But it looks. I'm gonna buy it. I think it looks like a cool game. But
I think, in my opinion, I think DayZ is good. But there's a lot of just like issues with it, like that.
Yeah.
Like it becomes like this game, like it's just like it's kind of weird. Like a lot of the fun comes from like you know like you're facing not just the zombies but other players, and you can like cooperate with them.
Yeah.
But they suffer from they're using the Arma 2 like. Since it's an odd mod for Arma 2, using the mod like they're using the engine. The engine's old. Like a lot of it is just like old and like. Deteriorate. Like it's just a very poorly developed and optimized game. Like Arma 2 Like, I had a very good computer that couldn't even run DayZ because Armor 2 is just so poorly optimized as an engine.
It's not efficient.
Yeah, it's very inefficient. It's poorly optimized. I've heard it uses a lot more memory than others, so you can't run like Google Chrome or like another browser that may take up like some like memory on your computer.
Yeah.
Because Arma 2 needs like full control of your memory. It's a very poorly designed game, and I think that's what DayZ kind of suffers from. I think they announced they were gonna make a standalone. Yeah.
It's gonna be like an alpha game. Like, they're basically just re-releasing the mod and then kind of working on from they're taking the Minecraft kind of aspect of things. They're gonna release like the development stage of the game and then add on to it over time.
I don't know, until I see some gameplay or just like photos in game, I don't want to hype myself up and I don't want to put it down too much. But my expectations right now are a lower for what DayZ is gonna be and higher for what War Z, since I've actually seen footage and seen
the
pictures.
War Z looks like a more refined, advanced. Yeah. Version of
that's why I just ignore DayZ games until new reviews come out.
Yeah. Moving on to the next topic. I guess subscription numbers for World of Warcraft have gone back over 10 million, thanks to the recent success of the MMO's latest expansion, Mists of Pandaria, which shipped 2.7 million copies worldwide, except for in China. Those hasn't yet released yet, which is where that has the bulk of the player base, which will be interesting to see how far the the sales numbers shoot up
from gold
there.
Farmers.
Yeah, it really shows that World of Warcraft knows the secret to longevity when it comes to a game.
Yeah. I think the thing is, like, with World of Warcraft, they always try to strive with the new expansions, not just making it, like, they try to make it with new zones, and they try to make new concepts and stuff, and it didn't really work well in Cataclysm, because you had, the zones were kind of, like, weirdly, like, placed. Like, the problem is you had, like, zones in different areas, and travel time, I think I mentioned this earlier, was a hassle, but, overall, I would agree with. I think that the sales show that the World of Warcraft is definitely getting back into the zone that it really had as a lot of people thought that it was going to be dethroned by what was it called, Terra, and then when it wasn't, a lot of people thought that Star Wars: The Old Republic would dethrone it, and then it did not. So like
Guild Wars 2 sold so many copies that they had to bring sales down for a couple days because
you couldn't buy it online. But I think a lot of people realize though. With Guild Wars 2, it's not a perfect game. I mean, since I've been playing it, I've noticed a lot of, like, complaints I've had with the game. I mean, with Guild Wars 2, you have, like, the questing, since it doesn't, like, give you an exact number of monsters or you have to kill or stuff you have to collect, it gives you, like, this bar that just fills up, and it kind of, like, you kind of, like, don't feel like you're getting anywhere, really.
Yeah.
And then, like, a lot of the story quests are kind of, like, the story quests are fun, but, like, all the other quests are really just tedious. Yeah. And like, since there's so many people on, like, a lot of this, like they'll give you multiple objectives you have to complete, and they still give you the same, like, amount of, they still fill the bar up the same amount, like, for a certain quest.
Yeah.
But it kind of creates this kind of, oh, man, like, you could collect, you either have to kill, like, these, like, mobs or collect this kind of stuff. Of course, everyone's doing the collecting, because that's the easiest part of it. And so there's nothing left to collect, because everyone else is doing that. And like half the other people who couldn't get the collecting are doing the killing. So, I think really for like an early like I don't think they really adjusted the spawns a lot.
Yeah.
I mean they even had like overflow world, but still you had a lot of people doing these quests, and like it was kind of hard just to do it because you didn't get shared. If you attacked it and they attacked it, you still didn't get like shared experience for it.
Yeah.
Really. And they can well and like I don't know.
Well, how long has World of Warcraft been,
prevalent, probably since, like, 2005, 2006.
Launched in 2004. So it's been around for 8 years.
That's 8 years.
Yeah. And the lowest the sub has been, like, the past, like, 6 years, it dropped down to, like, 9.1 million. And it shot back up. It used to be over, like, 11 or 12 million or something like that. And it lost a couple million subscribers. And now it looks like they're going back up.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, for the last topic I had, it's more just, like, a question, like, we kind of, like, dabbled at it earlier, but Sony, for instance, has been re-releasing collections of all their first-party games, like, in bundles they can buy. So, instance, like, God of War came out, you could buy all 5 God of War games in one package for $40. The Ratchet & Clank franchise, all the games came out bundled together for $30. Killzone, now we have the Resistance Collection coming out. Like, I think it's like a teaser from Sony that they're kind of wrapping up the PlayStation 3 game right for the PlayStation 4 by wrapping up like all like it's sort of like they're giving you wrapping up all their special first party games up in the bundles for you to buy, and then
I think
one last breath for the PS3.
I think it's kind of like a novelty kind of it. Like if you really wanted to buy a game but you didn't want to pay like the full price, but you wanted like the whole. Let's say you really like you looked at the Resistance series and you thought that really interested you, but you really didn't want to like spend money on like buying each of the three games.
Spend like $150.
Yeah.
It's like they're bundling out. I think it's a novelty. I don't think it's anything really like game breaking, but I think what I hope this doesn't encourage is other developers to just like they do that. I mean, it's okay to do it on newer systems just for like novelty and kind of like nostalgia. When like people start doing it just because they're lazy and they don't feel like making new games, you know, that's when I think really the line should be drawn. Like, as gamers, we will accept you, you know, once in a while making a pack of games that we really are interested in, but we can't have the money to buy separately. What we don't want you to do is make this like your habit, like just like do kind of like the Nintendo kind of model, except like on a larger scale, like. Package all like the you know the old Mario games together in a bundle, sell them for like the new Wii U, you know, but only with a little bit better graphics. I mean, that's not what people want. People want
yeah, like
games.
If people have those games already and they bought them because they came out, they're not gonna buy this pack because they already had the games, mm-hmm. So they're not gonna be making as much money for them.
Yeah. So I think yeah, that's what you said. Like the money will probably discourage.
Well, that's all the news blips that we have for us this week. All the topics kind of wraps us up for our first show.
Yeah. It's fun, guys. It was a very fun podcast. I think I hope it was very informative to those of you who are listening. I hope that we can do more. And, you know, I just feel like this... I want to make this as non... I want this to be opinionated, but I really hope that this isn't... I don't want to sound too preachy. I don't want to sound... I don't really want to sound like I'm preaching, but I definitely want to feel like I'm representing what the majority of gamers kind of feel. I want to try to see if I can be the voice of people who really just enjoy video games for video games. I don't want to sound like I'm trying to be like a critic, but I really don't want to be too overly enthusiastic for these games. Even if they do turn out to be the greatest game ever, I don't want to give up the hopes of the community just because I say, man, you know, Assassin's Creed 3, that game sounds like the greatest game ever, but in reality... You know, we don't know yet because no one's really played the whole game through.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if you liked us, subscribe to us, tell us to your friends, family, everybody know.
I believe.
Get as many listeners as we can.
I believe we'll be doing more episodes.
Yeah. Our goal is to maybe do this weekly, maybe just get... won't necessarily be the same panel every week. Maybe some people can't make it. Yeah, get different faces in here. But you can follow us on iTunes, which is where the podcast will be housed. You can, if you, we'd like to have, like, a readers kind of comment, or listeners kind of comment section on the show. Like, you can contact us, email us at gamefetish@live.com. Like, questions, concerns, praises, maybe some negative responses, maybe something we did wrong that you don't like. Any feedback's welcome. But, you can, is there any places that you can find each other, like Matt, where can people maybe follow you? Do you have, like, a Twitter?
Like I have a Twitter. It's the manmanzero at the manmanzero. It's basically if you ever want to find me on any games like excluding World of Warcraft, but this is like League of Legends. If you really want to find me on any games, literally, if you add that, you'll probably get me. Like that's probably me. Like if anyone, like I'm open since I've been playing. Whoa, what?
You got it.
Oh no, no. I thought something. I thought the recording had stopped. So I was like,
oh no.
But I think if you really want to like, if anyone's here interested in like World of Warcraft, I mean, like my in-game name is Gormunga, which is hard to spell. So Gurmonga. I play on currently Aragos, I think, is my server. Alliance, Ret Paladin. If anyone really wants to join up, I'm always open to playing World of Warcraft. Always open to playing League of Legends, discussing. So I mean. Yeah, that's what I feel. I mean, if anyone wants to get in contact, I mean, even if it's to say you really didn't agree with me, I mean, I would always be open to any sort of feedback you really can give me, as long as it's in some form constructive. I really feel like Like, you know, if you really want to send me like a message on Twitter just saying I hate you, I mean, you can do that, but I'd rather have you, you know, include some. Sort of, I'd rather have you put some sort of like criticisms, like, oh, I didn't like how you did this on the podcast. Try to do this, and you know, I would listen to your feedback.
Constructive criticism,
exactly.
Not just, you know, bull.
Is there any place they can find you, Tag?
Well, I'll be creating a Twitter, you know.
Yeah.
I guess. So next time around, I'll tell you where you can contact me.
Sounds good. Awesome. Is there anything you want to shout out? I know you're big on your music. I don't know.
I currently just started up in a band, and hopefully for the next podcast, we'll be able to create sort of like an intro or a soundtrack for this.
Yeah.
For these podcasts, we'll be able to use. So, mostly I operate through my social media through my band, which is Scarlight. So you can find us at find me, I guess, at Scarlight on YouTube. We'll be making a Twitter within the next week, so you should be able to link up to that at Scarlight. And also, you can hit me up on my personal Facebook. I'm going to allow my personal Facebook just for you guys. You know, Austin Peterman. Look that up. And then also, if anyone is interested, I am a pretty competitive Pokemon player. So you can find me, you know, some of the basic websites like Cerebeastmogon, etc. I use the username Sheps. And then same Sheps. Thing for
spell that?
S-H-E-P-S. And then you can also find me on the simulator, which is Pokemon Online at Sheps. I'm always open to play any of you guys, so yeah, hit me up.
Cool. And if the music, not guaranteeing that, depends on how long it takes out the podcast. Austin's song, I don't know how long it'll take to make it, but it may be the intro, conclusion song, whatever, for the podcast, for this podcast, but hopefully it'll definitely be up by next week, so. Yep, and you can follow me on Twitter at ctate1995. I also blog around on a bunch of different sites. You can find me on Game Informer, IGN, Bitmob, all at the same, ctate95. I'll give my opinion on different things in the gaming industry. I try my best to upload a game, like at least a game review every week, every other week if I can. But you can follow my writing there. And yeah, pretty much wraps us up for episode 1. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
See you later.
Hanging out.
See ya.